like the cricket. And it's interesting to observe the way sporting organisations operate. Certainly in this town, when you look at football, there's no doubt that the AFL, the Sydney Swans, the National Rugby League would be about as tenth as professional as just the Sydney Swans organisation. I mean, they're a mile behind the AFL. And this, I think, is an indication, because the AFL does better than the rugby league in terms of crowds and the way they run their show. It doesn't mean their game's any better, because I'm a rugby league man. And it actually hurts me to see the way the game can be mismanaged. But nonetheless, the comparison of all of this has got lessons for all of us, people in business, people in life. And it's been brought together in a book called Peak Performance, which has studied the world's top sports organisations. It's quite a remarkable work, this. Clive Gilson is the co-author, and Clive is actually from the University of Waikato. Is that right, Clive?
That is indeed true.
That's right. So you've gone to look at all of these sporting organisations, which you say are the most successful ones in the world, which have then provided examples for businesses into how to do things.
That's right. We come from a management school that we were kind of tired of looking at the same old management and organizational theories. And we wanted something a bit more inspirational for our executive MBA program and beyond to CEO programs. And what we wanted to do was to find some information, some data, if you will, that would give us some inspiration. And we looked at the possibility that sport organizations, not just the teams, but the sport organizations, would provide corporate inspiration. And the reason for that is, if you think about it, the competition on the field, on the court, is razor sharp. And we assumed, and I think quite rightly so, given the data we collected, that the management practices would reflect that razor sharp environment.
Okay, so you've gone and looked at specific sports organizations. You've looked at the San Francisco 49ers, Chicago Bulls. I think you did look at Manchester United, but they're going to be the subject of a separate study, aren't they?
That is correct, yes.
The New Zealand Rugby Union, the Australian Cricket Board, Australian Women's Netball. You've done all of these organisations, and you had extraordinary access, didn't you?
Yes, I think one of the reasons for that is because when you go to these large organisations, and we should include Williams Formula One and Bayern Munich and Women's Hockey Australia as well, and Team New Zealand in particular, I have to mention that, given that we just
won. Well, that's right.
Most people, when they go to these organizations, they want to talk to Michael Jordan, they want to talk to Steve Young, the quarterback of the 49ers, and they want to talk to Jacques Villeneuve, who was then, at the time when we met with them, the driver for Williams. That wasn't the story that we were initially interested in at all. What we wanted to do was tell an organizational story. And remarkably, when we asked if we could have access, we kind of sheepishly said, well, I guess you kind of get these requests all the time. And they said, well, not really, because everybody wants to speak to the teams. We finally did get access to the teams, not because we asked, but because the organizations told us that the teams were part of the organization. And in order for us to get a full flavor and a full feeling and a full sense of why sustained contention was the architecture of their existence, that we would have to talk to the players as well. And when we talked to the players invariably said the reason why we have been in contention for our championship or whatever for so long is because of the organizational footprint. It's the guys at the front who make the whole thing tick.
Because in so many instances, you've got organizations where within the competition, you've got the same amount of money being poured into other teams or other organizations, so they've got the same resources, the same capacity to recruit players. So you've tried to find out what it is that sets them apart. Why Manchester United, why Bayern Munich, why the Australian cricket team has been so successful when there are other countries where it's a national sport, where they pour all the resources into it.
John, you mentioned money there. It certainly isn't money. If you take Team New Zealand, they slid by on a third of what Prada had available to them and have retained the America's Cup. And their challenge, of course, is to retain it forever. And we suspect that they're going to have a downward stab at that. If you take Women's Hockey Australia, Netball Australia, they're smaller codes in terms of world sport, and they slide by on just a few million dollars. Williams Formula One, nothing like the resources of Ferrari over the last 20 years, and yet they've dominated the sport until recently, and they will again with the BMW powertrain as well.
Yeah, well, they've just come third on
Sunday.
Yes,
indeed, a tremendous performance, actually. The first time in 30 years that a new powertrain has actually been on the podium on the first time out.
Yeah, they were very excited by that. So what is it then about their organisation? Because there must be other groups that compete in Formula One who are saying, well, how can they do it without the money, without the resources? So what is it that you found that sets them apart?
Yeah, we think it's the way the organisation is run. We think it's the kind of people who work there and the way in which they work together. Without getting too much into high theory, we call it PPO theory, Performing Organisation Theory, which I should indicate that people who want to buy and read this book should not feel particularly put off by the fact that it's a business book. It's a storytelling book.
Mm. And we tell a lot of sports stories in here, haven't you?
A lot of sports stories, and then we pull the theory together at the end. But what we found in terms of the lessons for corporate inspiration, is that all these organizations begin with an inspirational dream. They actually have an inspirational dream. They don't have mission statements. They don't have vision statements. They all have a particular stretchy challenge, a greatest imaginable challenge, as we call it, which they continually reset as they try to achieve those goals and invariably do achieve them. And then they focus on what they have to do every single day to make that dream come into action. And that's a purpose which is very hard fought for. And organizations that achieve that peak purpose, as we call it, are likely to be on the right track. Following that, we have practices and individual experience around exceeding personal best, which explain the basis of the theory.
Is there something that really struck you as almost crystallizing all of this that happened in a particular organization?
I think that's a pretty hard question to answer, to tell you the truth, John. I think we were surprised that all the organizations were indeed comparable, were similar in terms of the practices which they'd evolved over time. Mm. And we've tried to capture that so that corporates beyond the world of sport, going from sport to business, will be able to benefit from it. I think the calmness, the tranquility, the intuition, the ability to continually stretch for higher goals was common to all the organizations, and that is our inspiration for corporate life.
Yeah, the Chicago Bulls. Now, they built their success in recent years around Michael Jordan.
Well, they did to some degree. They called the United Center the house that Michael built, and it's hard to get away from that. But if you think about Jordan's role at the Bulls here, he was drafted in 84, and they actually didn't win a goddamn thing until the early 90s. And it was crafting the organization around it, in particular branding the Chicago Bulls, not just around Michael Jordan, but around the organization itself, that leverage maximum opportunities around Michael Jordan. They were planning for his retirement the day he arrived, and they are forward sold in the United Center now for the next several years. They are creating the future, which is an important element of our theory, and rather than selling their new draft picks, they're building them and developing them rather than buying in people who've only got a few years to go in their careers.
Now, there are those who might say that putting the New Zealand Rugby Union in there is a bit cheeky, given that it is the primary sport in New Zealand. Here, the Rugby Union competes with Rugby League, competes with AFL. It's the only country, of course, that's won the World Cup outside its home territory, and it's done it twice. So, should you have been putting the Australian Rugby Union in there, not the New Zealand Rugby Union?
That's a very interesting question, John. Let me try and answer that for you. Our issue is long-term sustained contention. If you look at the All Blacks, they have a 72% win record over 100 years. We don't load up in particular on championship performances in any one year. Our theory is about long-term sustained contention. It doesn't help us understand a particular or a single game, such as the tragic loss to the French. and so we are very, very happy to include the All Blacks. Incidentally, it's the NZRFU that we reviewed, not just the All Blacks. Mm. We can look at Super 12, which we're very successful in, the NPC.
Yes.
We can look at the Maori All Blacks, the Black Ferns, who are world champions. So we are very, very pleased to have the NZRFU as part of the book and part of the project.
So can you apply these principles to a small soccer club, to your business, to community organizations?
You certainly can apply it directly to sport organizations, but inevitably the reason why we wrote this book is for corporate inspiration. We have a chapter in here on Procter & Gamble, which explains and illustrates the theory by reference to the peak performing activities of Procter & Gamble. And also, I think most importantly, we have as one of our co-authors, Kevin Roberts, who's the worldwide CEO of Saatchi & Saatchi. And he's been using PPO theory, as we call it, for the last 2 to 3 years. They've quadrupled their share price in that period of time. So we believe quite passionately that what we have here is something that all organizations should be investing heavily in. And that begins with buying the book.
Yeah, well, I think you're obviously a salesman as well. But the other thing, I mean, we can all identify with it, can't we? We know we know organisations, sporting organisations, and we think, why are they underachieving? Mm-hmm. And the poor fan that goes along, inevitably they direct their ire at the officials, and justifiably so, it would seem. Because there's so many sporting organisations that underperform, make dopey decisions, and you just tear your hair out, if you've got any, and you just, you know, wonder why they can't see what they're doing wrong.
I think in their defence, the problem that you've got is the issue of time. One of our stories, the Atlanta Braves, illustrates how Ted Turner gave Stan Kasten, the president of the Atlanta Braves, the precious gift of time. And even though they were losing games for 5 years, they were the cellar dwellers in Major League Baseball. They were creating the future and building not just the team through the young arms, through the minor farm system, but through the organization as well. And in the season 1991, they turned it around from worst to best.
Yeah.
And I think the pressure on officials and administrators in sport is absolutely astonishing. And they really feel that they have to turn it around. And they have to turn it around by engaging in short-term solutions. And for us, from a corporate, the corporate equivalent of that is obeying the whims of short-term capital markets. And this book is not about that. It is about long-term gestation of success, long-term sustained peak performance. And it is tough to do it in sport, no question about it. If you look at all our teams, very, very difficult to find teams that would challenge our organizations in terms of being able to sustain peak performance over many, many years.
Yeah. Well, what's the peak? What's the one, the pinnacle of it all? If you had a league table of these teams and these organizations?
You know, John, we always get asked that question. And we've tried to do that ourselves. And from any one moment in time, we can say, well, yeah, this was good or that was good. I think recency, although we try not to to be slaves to recency, if you look at Team New Zealand, their demolition of Prada was absolutely amazing. And we believe the reason for that is because they are the consummate PPO. That's not to detract from all our other organisations.
Didn't get huge play over here, you'd be surprised. It got a run, big run, not massive run.
Yeah,
I think we'll be giving it. I think we sent a few kids over there for a bit of a run on a shoestring budget.
That's
basically
correct.
Preparing them to take it away from you in 3 years' time.
I'll dream on, John.
I'll keep that on tape for sure. All right, so it's called Peak Performance.
Thank you, John.
And if you're interested in sport and business, and I think there's a very good line here, actually. These are the screeds that you put out with these things. But there's a line here which I found interesting. It says, where is it? It talks about how there's a whole heap of stories. Yeah, with 2 to 3, this is from The Independent. Mm-hmm. With 200 to 300 pages dedicated to sports stories, Peak Performance may actually be read by many who buy it.
That's our hope.
Unlike most books that people buy and stick on the shelves. Thank you for that.
Thank you, John.
And it's called Peak Performance, and HarperCollins. There you go.